Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Petzner, your host on The Raw Deal. Vladimir Zelensky arrogantly slammed the Security Council and demands Moscow lose its veto power. This is about as outrageous as it gets. The history of the UN is long, but the members of the Security Council earned their way. Russia lost, anywhere from 12 to 20 million in World War II. The idea, this little pimple, this puppet in Ukraine should be calling for Russia to lose its veto power is beyond absurd. It's grotesque. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky attacked the UN as an ineffective body unable to enforce its own principles. The Ukrainian leader called Russia to lose its veto power on the Security Council. Speaking in a special session of the Security Council, the UN's most powerful body, Zelensky said the organization had failed to uphold its values. Ukrainian soldiers are now dying at the expense of their blood. What the UN Security Council should do by its voting. They've stopped aggression. They're stopping aggression and upholding the principles of the UN Charter. Oh, I don't think so. The Ukrainian leader added, removing Russia's veto power was a necessary step because all efforts are vetoed by the aggressor. The U.S., U.K., France, China, and Russia are the permanent members of the Security Council and can veto any resolution that comes to the floor of the body. Think about it. It was Ukraine's desire to join NATO. It was Ukraine's endless assault on the Donbass, on the people of the Donetsk and the Luhansk region, that caused the intervention, plus a planned onslaught on the Donbass, where the assaults had been nonstop since the coup of 2014, engineered by Victoria Nuland using $5 billion of your and my dollars. Meanwhile, Ukraine claims sabotage attack on a critical Russian airbase, but provides dubious evidence. In other words, It looks like they're faking it. I'm very pleased to say, I believe my special guest for today is joined. Very, very pleased. Nick, yes.
This is an hour early. Aren't you on at 6 o'clock?
No, Nick, I sent you an email when I verified the time, so we got the time. Okay. That's it. We're already on the air.
I'll join the Zoom meeting now. Okay?
Oh, you're already on the air, Nick.
Well, I'm just joining the Zoom meeting now.
No, I shut off the Zoom meeting when you were there. That's okay. We'll just do it by audio. We'll just do it by phone.
Well, it's very expensive on my telephone. Can you phone me?
Tell you what, Nick. At the bottom of the hour, we'll switch to Zoom, okay? At the bottom of the hour, I'll get you. I'll bring you in at the bottom of the hour.
What does that mean, bottom of the hour?
At half past.
Half past, right.
Thanks, Nick. Such. Wow. Mitchell, we still got Nick there. I think you need to cut him off. Okay, good. Thank you. Or if you could call him back, that would be good. If you could call him back. This is mucked up. Meanwhile, Ukraine claims a sabotage attack on a critical Russian airbase and provides questionable evidence. I think what I'll have to do is, yeah, we'll figure it out. The Ukrainian main directorate of intelligence claims a sabotage attack was carried out at a key Russian airbase just miles from Moscow. HUR has not provided evidence any Russian planes were damaged or that the covert operation happened. Anthony Gurashenko, an advisor to the Ministry of Internal Affairs of Ukraine, posted details of the alleged covert bombing on Twitter. Unidentified saboteurs blew up two airplanes and a helicopter in Moscow region on 18 September, Ukrainian Defense Intelligence claims. The sabotage reportedly took place at the Chaklovsky Air Base, where government planes, doomsday planes, and reconnaissance aircrafts are based, he wrote. Unidentified person placed the explosives on a closely guarded airfield and blew up an AN-148 and IL-20 aircraft belonging to the 354th Special Operation Air Aviation Regiment, as well as an Mi-28N helicopter, which had previously been actively engaged in shooting down. Ukrainian Pravda reported that HUR believes the damage to the Russian aircraft will take time to repair. The damage caused to the planes makes their rapid restoration improbable. A tail part of the helicopter was damaged by the explosion. Another AN-148 parked close to the other was slightly damaged. But it may just be bullshit. Look, Zelensky is absolutely desperate to try to make out that Ukraine is upholding its end in the war when they're actually having the hell beat out of them. Nick? Nick, it's okay. I'll connect with you by Zoom in 15 minutes or so. Okay, we'll do that.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. You connect me with Zoom. That's fine.
You
okay,
got
bye.
It. Bye. Meanwhile, and this is very significant, Poland says it's no longer arming Ukraine amid a grain spat. This shows a conflict in NATO. Polish Prime Minister that says More, where Iraq said Wednesday Poland is no longer arming Ukraine, making a significant shift as Warsaw has been a staunch supporter of the NATO proxy war with Russia. Morawiecki's comments came amid a spat between Warsaw and Kiev over a Polish ban on Ukrainian grain. When asked that the dispute would impact Polish support for Ukraine, he said, "We are no longer transferring weapons to Ukraine because we are now arming Poland with more modern weapons." He insisted Warsaw had no intention of risking the security of Ukraine and that weapon shipments from other countries transiting through Poland would not be interfered with. Poland had become the primary hub for NATO arms shipments into Ukraine since Russia launched its invasion. Meanwhile, there's a very touching story on the BBC about where Ukrainians' army of amputees go to repair their lives. Frankly, their lives are basically shattered. As Ukraine's counteroffensive grinds on, with limited gains and no decisive breakthrough, the number of amputees in the country is soaring. There were 15,000 the first half of the year alone. According to the Department of Health in Kiev, the ministry won't disclose how many are soldiers. The authorities guard casualty figures closely, but the vast majority, of course, are likely to be military. That's more amputees in 6 months than the UK had in the 6 years of World War II, when 12,000 of its servicemen and women lost limbs. There may be many more to come in Europe's newest war. Ukraine is the most heavily mined country in the world. According to the country's former defense minister, Rusky Reznikov, Russia's war is creating an army of amputees here, a conveyor belt of broken bodies. They go on with stories, personal stories up close and personal, but it's hardly surprising. Meanwhile, get this, very striking. War with Russia to massacre 50,000 Americans every 2 weeks, with forced conscription of young Americans now inevitable, warns the U.S. Army War College. Listen to this. In the autumn issue of the U.S. Army War College's Parameters, a quarterly published refereed forum that furthers the profession of senior military officers on national security affairs, a call to action on a possible war with Russia that will kill about 50,000 Americans was presented. It pointed out a massive loss of service members will also trigger conscription to fill the ranks. The War College is a U.S. Army educational institution in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, on the 500-acre campus of historic Carlisle Barracks, which provides graduate-level introduction to tenured military officers and civilians to prepare them for leadership assignment and responsibilities. According to the 13-page write-up, the U.S. Army faced a strategic inflection point after a failed counterinsurgency effort in Vietnam 50 years ago. In response to lessons learned from Yom Kippur War, the Army Training and Doctrine Command was created to reorient thinking and doctrine around the conventional Soviet threat. It also emphasized that the ongoing and dragging Russian-Ukraine war is just exposing significant vulnerabilities in the Army's strategic personnel depth and ability to withstand and replace casualties. Because of this, the Army Theater Medical Planner may anticipate a sustained rate of roughly 3,600 casualties per day, ranging from those that killed in action to those wounded in action or suffering disease or other non-battle injuries. And with a 25% predictive replacement rate, the personnel system will require 800 new personnel each day in large-scale combat operations. The United States could experience the same number of casualties in 2 weeks and know that in 20 years of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. sustained about 50,000 casualties. That was over 20 years. At the rate they're talking, it would happen very, very fast in Ukraine. Moreover, the Army is facing a dire combination of a recruiting shortfall and a shrinking individual ready reserve, which is nearly 50% in the combat arms career management fields. Every infantry and armored soldier we do not recruit today is a strategic mobilization asset we will not have in 2035. The individual ready reserve, which stood at 700,000 in 1973 and 450,000 in 1994, now stands at 76,000. These numbers cannot fill the existing gaps in the active force, let alone any casualty replacement or expansion during large-scale combat operation parameters emphasized. Unlike the Vietnam War, the ubiquitous use of unmanned aerial vehicles and surface vehicles, satellite imagery, sensor-based technology, smartphones, commercial data links, and open source intelligence is fundamentally changing the way armies will fight. These systems, coupled with emerging artificial intelligence platforms, dramatically accelerate the pace of modern war. Well, they're talking about the necessity for conscription. That means a draft. And I got to tell you, the American public isn't going to go for this. There's no enthusiasm for this war. I mean, the idea that Russia could massacre 50,000 Americans every 2 weeks. I've explained before why I believe Nixon's abolition of the draft, which was intended to take the wind out of the sails of the anti-war movement, which has succeeded in accomplishing, meant that America really doesn't have the manpower, the force, to maintain a war, to conduct a war, even a conventional war. We're prepared for nuclear, but nuclear entails mutually assured destruction, whether the planners at the Pentagon or the Rand Institute want to acknowledge it or not. If we get into a nuclear war with Russia, two-thirds of the United States are going to be annihilated. How's that for population reduction? I'll bet Bill Gates will be happy. I would certainly hope he's among those who are incinerated, perhaps by one of the Satan II missiles with 15 independently targetable warheads. Gates, Klaus Schwab, the Rothschild, all are most deserving of incineration. And Russia, by the way, has made it very clear, if nuclear war breaks out, that England, even London, has a high priority, that they're going to be target number one, and very appropriately so. Meanwhile, meanwhile, there's a report about the hidden Ukraine war agenda I want to share. Get this.
Have you been suspicious like me that there was money laundering going on with American taxpayer dollars and the country of Ukraine? Well, hold that thought, because I'm going to walk you through a few major updates that have just come out. Did you know that last night, Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine held secret meetings with BlackRock, Blackstone, JP Morgan Bank, and a few other major financial players? Did you also know that he is in great danger of not getting funding from America because Republicans in Congress are saying, I'm not giving any more votes towards money going to Ukraine if there isn't accountability? On top of that, I've had guest after guest after guest say how corrupt the country of Ukraine is and how Zelensky is really just a placeholder puppet. Well, now look how many people Zelensky has had to fire because of corruption. People in the military, people in his cabinet, his advisors, they were all taking in tons and tons of money, showing up to meetings in brand new BMWs, going off to their second and third home. Meanwhile, we're being told that we're not sacrificing enough for Ukraine's democracy, even though they're not planning to hold a democratic election this year because of the war. Now, this is where it gets really interesting, because yesterday it was announced that the United States will give $25 billion of U.S. taxpayer money to the World Bank. The World Bank then will give that money to the Clinton Global Initiative so that it can be fairly distributed through Bill and Hillary Clinton's foundation to the people of Ukraine. Now, they have not worked at the Clinton Global Initiative for 6 years. The Clinton Foundation has been under investigation for years. Why? Because it was proven that they were laundering money through their efforts on the island of Haiti. So now they've been hand-selected to fairly and equitably distribute taxpayer money to the people of Ukraine. Now, this is a developing story. Zelensky will be speaking to Congress today, holding more secret meetings in the days to come, and about $25 billion of your money and my money is about to flow through the hands of Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, think about that. Bill and Hill are going to have $25 billion of our money to play with. How outrageous is that? Meanwhile, we have a simply absurd claim being floated that Putin is behind the immigration crisis in Europe, according to a Polish diplomat. Someone is helping thousands of asylum seekers read Italy's Lampedusa. Deputy Foreign Minister Akadusis Mlekarski claimed. A senior Polish diplomat has suggested a recent surge in illegal immigration arriving on the Italian island of Lampedusa might be a component of a Russian hybrid operation designed to erode the European Union's support for Ukraine. Think about this. It's as though he never heard of that Kalergi plan, as though he doesn't know this is an Israeli op, that they're trying to destroy the ethnicity and the integrity and the coherence of the European community, and that this is hardly the initiation and that Vladimir Putin has nothing to do with it. This concern comes in light of a report from the Italian Interior Ministry indicating that over 89,000 have entered Italy illegally this year. Lampedusa, closer to Tunisia than the mainland, and approximately halfway between Libya and Sicily, is beset by huge intake of migrants and remains a prominent destination for those arrivals. Someone is helping these people walk hundreds, if not thousands, of kilometers from Nigeria and Central African countries to the Mediterranean Sea, said the Polish Deputy Foreign Minister in an interview on Polish radio Tuesday. Someone who has an interest in it. And Russia undoubtedly has an interest in it. This is just ridiculous. We have convoys bringing the migrants up to our border with Mexico. Huge convoys. And the trucks have on their doors the Star of David. Don't let yourself be played. The propaganda is unending. He asserted Russian President Putin's objective is to destabilize the situation in Western Europe, suggesting the current state of confusion and unrest brought on by the illegal immigration serves as a means to divert attention away from the ongoing crisis in Ukraine. Right. According to him, Putin is believed to be exerting influence behind the scene in smuggling individuals into the EU, often facilitated by criminal groups. Yeah, I think you could call the Khazarian Mafia a criminal group. And it was successful because today, the war in Ukraine is fading into the background, and the entire EU is talking about what's happening in Lampedusa. Claims of Russia's alleged involvement in facilitating illegal immigration into Europe have circulated for years. November 2021, the issue gained prominence when certain EU member states, including Poland, accused Russia's ally, Belarus, and by extension, Russia, of exploiting migrants seeking asylum in the EU for political purposes. At that time, Putin addressed the ongoing challenge, saying that the key link of migrant smuggling network was located within the EU. We'll be right back with my special guest, Nick Kohlstrom. Stand by.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hey, guys, I don't hear Jim. I just got back.
Oh, Mitchell. Oh, bad. Wow. Okay. I'll pick it all up.
I got you now, Jim.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mitchell. I'll pick it up right now. Here's a major story. Via House Judiciary Committee, Republicans, the FBI lost count of how many paid informants they had in the Trump crowd on January 6th. Get this. The House Judiciary Republicans sent out an explosive letter Tuesday that changes our understanding of what happened on January 6th, at least if you naively assumed any of the reports we've had in the past were on the up and up. The letter includes transcribed testimony from former assistant director in charge at the Washington Field Office, Stephen D'Antuono. D'Antuono testified the FBI had numerous confidential human sources in the Trump crowd on January 6th. In fact, they had so many FBI operatives, they had no idea how many were actually there that day. From the document, D'Antuono explained, due to the large number of CHS, confidential human sources, present at the Capitol, the WFO asked FBI headquarters to do a poll or put out something to people saying, were only CHS involved? Were any CHS involved? So the FBI could try to ascertain how many CHS had been in attendance. D'Antuono stated, after the outreach from headquarters, was when we started to get responses back. As one example, he recalled a CHS from the Kansas City field office was on site at the Capitol and had allegedly been in contact with his handler while at the event. The CHS reported to his handler while they were in the crowd, I think, saying that they were going in. They were trying to stop some of the action happening, and then they left or whatever. Mind you, that's ridiculous. They weren't stopping anything. They were the provocateurs. This new information is extremely concerning. It suggests the FBI cannot adequately track the activities and operations of its informants, and that it lost control of its CHS president at the Capitol on January 6th, no doubt. These revelations reinforce existing concerns identified by Special Counsel Durham about the FBI's use of and payment to CHSs who have fabricated evidence and misrepresented information. The Justice Department Inspector General also identified critical problems in the FBI's CHS program, including the FBI's failure to fully vet CHS and the FBI's willingness to ignore red flags that would call into question an informant's reliability. But what they were doing, of course, was trying to completely control the sequence of events on January 6th. Here's a tweet from the House Judiciary GOP. FBI lost count of how many paid informants were at the Capitol on January 6th. Just absolutely unbelievable. Just unbelievable. These are the same vile group who broke down doors and arrested grandmas and veterans who walked inside the Capitol that day. The Gateway Pundit has reported on the government's operatives in a crowd for 2 years now. Yes. Good that this is getting out. Meanwhile, a federal judge is refusing to give Hunter Biden special treatment, has ordered him to appear in court. Good. Meanwhile, we have another report. Trump's fate now in the hands of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is going to be considering three cases from January 6th defendants related to the obstruction charges they faced. Joseph Fisher, Garrett Miller, Edward Lange have all filed appeals to the Supreme Court claiming that the prosecutors exceeded their authority and that charges of obstruction of an official proceeding from violating a 2002 law passed following the Enron scandal. The Supreme Court decision on these three cases could have an effect on former President Trump's criminal indictment. Lange's attorneys have claimed that the future of the First Amendment was on the line. He added a law originally meant to target financial fraud has now been turned into a political weapon used against the government's opposition. The Department of Justice has noted more than 200 have been charged with having violated the obstruction law in connection with their involvement in the Capitol attack. Former President Trump is also facing these charges. If the Supreme Court sides with the defendants, the decision could have an effect on hundreds of defendants who've been charged on similar ground. Craig Trossino, a law professor at the University of Miami, noted what the defendant's lawyers were doing was the same thing other lawyers in their position would have done. However, as he pointed out, this did not necessarily mean they would win or that their claim was legally accurate. However, their argument is focused on the definition of official proceeding, which, as he points out, does not have a vague meaning ordinarily. So he does not believe it will offend due process under these circumstances. Of course, the official meeting was supposed to be the count of the vote, except what they actually disrupted was the discussion of evidence that the election had been stolen. I mean, that was the objective. Meanwhile, according to another story, Biden fears he's going to die. White House aides are walking on eggshells. Get this. An inquiry pertains to the identification of the individuals who were adversely affected when Robert Hunter Biden reportedly provided false information on a federal background check document in 2018, afterward engaging in the unlawful acquisition of a firearm. Were the individual potentially at risk from a man who, according to his own confession, was deeply immersed in a drug dependency comparable to that depicted in the literary work of Hunter Thompson, the author of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas? Thompson himself might have advised caution to the son of the future president, saying, "Whoa, as a fellow enthusiast of mind-altering substances, my friend, it would be prudent for you to assess your situation before encountering detrimental circumstances." Well, I'm pleased to say that I believe Nick is now joining me. Nicholas Kohlerstrom, how are you, my friend?
Well, I'm a bit late, Jim.
Yeah, it happens, Nick. It happens. And with our transatlantic time zones, we seem to have problems. I actually figured it out last night. It would be 4 o'clock your time, but I know you had in mind 6. So I wasn't all that surprised when, you know, we had got our wires crossed.
Yeah, well, I just got back from the gym, actually. Anyway, are we all set now?
Very good, Nick. Well, let me review a couple of the stories that are important to our discussion of your book, Ukraine, the Just War. We have Zelensky slamming the UN at the Security Council meeting, demanding Moscow lose its veto power. Nick, this is just incredible. It's unusual for the leader of a country not on the Security Council to speak at a session, and of course Ukraine is not. The Russian ambassador objected to Zelensky speaking, but he was allowed to proceed with his address. The Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, didn't arrive until after he had left. He condemned the UN for failing to resolve the aggression. We should recognize the UN finds itself in a deadlock on the matters of aggression, humankind, no longer pins its hopes on the UN and Nick. He said the organization had failed to uphold its values, that Ukrainian soldiers are now doing at the expense of their blood what the UN Security Council should be doing by voting. They're stopping aggression and upholding the principles of the UN. Nick, I mean, what he's saying here is just ridiculous if you understand the development of the and the reason for the special military operation. I mean, Zelensky coming to, you know, admonish the United Nations when his country, his government, he himself is proven to be a war criminal of a very high order. Your thoughts?
Yeah, as you say, he's got no business addressing the UN Security Council. Yeah, it just makes it incredibly biased and impossible for the Security Council to resolve anything. This happened before when Russia was trying to bring evidence of all the biological warfare centers, at least 24 they found throughout Ukraine. And this is a total violation of the Biological Warfare Convention. And the UN Security Council just dismissed it. It wouldn't hear the evidence. The British and American delegates claim this is just disinformation, and they brushed it aside. So somehow the UN is failing to doesn't seem to have any constructive resolve in this crisis. The failure of communication just means that the war goes on. I mean, there's no coherent dialogue that diplomats can resolve at the moment.
And of course, we have earlier episode where Russia asked for an investigation of the Nord Stream pipeline bombing, and the UN was not willing to even hear it, Nick. I mean, this is very, very insulting and contrary to the principles that are supposed to govern that august institution.
Yeah, it is strange. That's the greatest terrorist attack since 9/11. And the UN just kind of backed out. I mean, I guess they know who did it. Obviously, America had a central role, as I hope we'll come to in a minute, whereby the reason why the whole war started, to have an opportunity to stop this pipeline and stop mutual prosperity between Russia and Germany and Europe. That was a major aim of the war starting, to justify blowing up the pipeline. As you say, the UN is somehow paralysed. I would say the urgent requirement for the UN Security Council, there's 5 permanent members, is to get Britain out of it and get India in instead. I think you'd get a lot more sensible discussion if you had India and China there to evaluate things. These are nations with a reputation for not wanting war and being peaceful in their diplomacy. Whereas when you've got US and UK there together, they're always going to justify the war and find the reasons for war. That's just their nature. Yeah.
That's a very interesting suggestion, Nick. What about expanding the Security Council by adding India, since the UK would fight like mad, tooth and nail, its removal?
It's a club at the moment. It's just a club of nations with nuclear weapons, which is the very worst kind of thing you want for looking after the safety of the world. So I think a country like India, with a reputation for not wanting war, would be what it most needs, in a way, as well as possibly one or two of the Southern Hemisphere nations.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Well, we have other reports. We have Lavrov blasting the U.S. for waging a proxy war in Ukraine. The Washington-led North Atlantic Alliance has transferred nearly $100 billion in military aid to Kiev. Lavrov said the White House was controlling Ukraine's military decisions. He explained Moscow's position Sunday morning, no matter what it says, the U.S. controls this war. It supplies weapons, munitions, intelligence, data from satellite, pursuing a war against us.
It's terribly important to appreciate that the disintegration of the sovereignty of Ukraine happened even before Zelensky was elected. There's detailed reports about US money funnels in, and you get politicians with integrity, because the vast majority of Ukraine wanted to sign the Minsk protocols. They wanted peace. They wanted to get on together with their Russian neighbors in eastern Ukraine. And a whole lot of experienced politicians, diplomats in the Ukraine, the Kiev government, who wanted to do that. And they were pushed out by basically US agents and stooges because of all the money that America can provide. And this was in the second decade of this century, after the Maidan coup, right in 2014, you started getting these politicians, people coming in who weren't real politicians at all. Then you get Zelensky elected on a massive majority because of his peace pledge. He promises the people of Ukraine that he will negotiate to activate the Minsk Accords, which means that the whole of Ukraine can stay united, no need for a war, and eastern Ukraine will have some autonomy of its own, you know, because they've got Russian language, guarantees the Russian traditions and customs. That was what was in the Minsk Accords, very mild and moderate, and the huge majority wanted that. And that is what we would have had were it not for this corruption of the government which happened. That became much more evident once Zelensky was elected. He was elected on his peace pledge, and then he totally reversed his whole position very soon. He was pressured to do so. He was just an actor, he was a comedian actor, and he totally backtracked on all his promises and became this war president and started justifying the crackdown on Russian culture, the banning of Russian culture, and a continual genocide program, shelling of the eastern states, Luhansk, Donetsk, and that went on. That had been going on for 8 long years, or ever since 2014. So he backed this program with real genuine Nazis in the Ukraine army, the Azov Battalion, the Kraken. And Zelensky supported this and became the great warmonger that we know today. That was basically American influence in the government. And then we saw a month after the war began, just about a month after, the terrific peace discussions that went on in Istanbul between Russia and Ukraine. This was what Russia aimed for, what it called a special military operation, right? Had the purpose, you know, the purpose of conquering Ukraine. They didn't want to occupy Kiev or anything. The purpose probably was to get the Ukrainians to the negotiating table, make them realize they couldn't win a war and they better negotiate. And they were all set to sign that, and they would have had very reasonable provisions that both sides could have agreed to with the degree of autonomy of the little, they're called oblasts, like mini states in East Ukraine, and but they would have had some degree of autonomy from the main government, and that was due to happen. And what happens? The British ex-prime minister Boris Johnson turns up, and he instructs Zelensky, forget the peace negotiations. Walk away from them. You don't negotiate with Putin. And next thing the world heard, because these negotiations were all a bit confidential, it was all finished. Okay, the war continues, and we've had something like another 200,000 Ukrainians slaughtered on this incredibly pointless war because of that ex-British Prime Minister turning up then and ending the war and ending the peace negotiations.
What an act of perfidy to use the Minsk Accord as a fig leaf to strengthen Ukraine militarily. That's outrageous, as Angela Merkel has acknowledged, Nick. And what credibility has the West? Russia cannot take the word of the West to have any value or trustworthiness whatsoever.
Yeah, as you said, Jim, that is quite mind-boggling mendacity. Usually, you know, if you tell a lie, you try to sort of cover it up or get away with it. That for 8 long years, Russia was hoping against hope that somebody was going to take notice of the Minsk Accords signed by French and German presidents, as well as the president of Ukraine and the two little mini-states, Donetsk and Luhansk, the mayors of those. So those were that was the signed promise, as you say, German-French leaders, Angela Merkel, and she was, polls showed she was the most respected diplomat in Europe, and everyone thought the end of her presidency was going to be switching on the Nord Stream pipeline. You know, that was the great event that she could have smiled and had happy memories of, bringing prosperity to Germany and friendship to Europe. Oh no, we're kind of that. So €20 billion was spent on this pipeline, working on this pipeline, and it's built all these years. And we now have Merkel.
Nick, hold that thought. We'll pick it up with Angela Merkel right after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It's
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
For those who may not know, my guest today, Nicholas Kohlerstrom, PhD, is a distinguished historian of science from the UK. He's an expert on Isaac Newton. He has many books. He's become involved in research on conspiracies. His book on the London 7-7 subway bombings, Terror on the Tube, is now in, I don't know, seventh edition, Nick. He's also published what may be, if not the, among the most important books ever on the use of, let me put it this way, delousing technology in a labor camps in Germany in World War II, for which he lost his position at University College London, sad to say. Censorship in the UK is about as bad as it is right here in the USA. He's also the author of books about a number of wars, including Ukraine, a just war, about which I believe he is 100% correct. And part of our conversation today will include reflections on Vladimir Putin's speech of the 21st of February of last year, where he explained exactly why Russia was undertaking an intervention in Ukraine. There was just no doubt about it. Kiev had been shelling the Donbass, the Donetsk and the Luhansk regions with artillery virtually nonstop since the coup of 2014. Thousands of Russian-friendly or actually ethnically Russian individual were killed. They were planning a massive assault on the Donbass, which would have led to a huge slaughter. Vladimir Putin intervened to prevent that from happening, and also, of course, in opposition to the effort by Ukraine to become a member of NATO, which was in the national security of Russia. And all we get from the United States, the Department of State, the White House is nonstop propaganda distorting the facts of the matter. Historians are going to record this as one of the blackest, most evil events in recent history. And Nick, I just admire your speaking out so clearly that Russia was fully justified in engaging in this war and intervening in Ukraine, my friend. I mean, you are telling it like it is. Your thoughts?
Well, can I just add to what Jim has said, that we're not war correspondents. Our expertise is the nature of deception, state-generated deception, which in this century always ratifies wars. Horrible point is wars are ratified by the deceptive logic that is created by the state. If honest diplomats were able to speak candidly to each other, then this war could not be taking place, okay? It's happening because of untrue narratives generated and then projected through the mass media, and these generate hate, and they ratify the need for violence, because dialogue has broken down. That is why what we call the truth moment is so important. Jim, perhaps if we focus now on the events just leading up to this outbreak of the war in February 2022. You okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, we're all given the comic book version on the narrative. The big bad Russia suddenly invades politically Ukraine for no reason on February 24th of 22. I must say, there was a Russian member of parliament who the previous year had prophesied that 22-22 would be a turning point for Russia and it would have to fight a war and it could not hope to avoid that. So we're looking at how Russia could not. Why is it that Russia could not avoid that conflict? Well, let's just focus on what happened immediately before that. In September the previous year, the Nord Stream pipeline had been completed. Now, I suggest to you this is the worst, which was perceived by NATO as the worst challenge it had ever faced. The very worst nightmare for the NATO warmongers is peace and friendship breaking out between Germany and Russia, okay? So it switched on that pipeline, the gas has started to flow, European prosperity would have been assured, and Russians and Germans could start talking to each other. That would be, I mean, why would you need NATO anymore? So that had to be stopped at all costs. So after it was finished in September, we endlessly heard British and American spokesperson instructing Germany not to switch the gas on. And let's remember, Germany does not properly have sovereignty since World War II. It's permanently an occupied nation. It has very limited ability to make its own decisions, right? We then get, this is revealed by Seymour Hersh, in January, a special secret meeting in Washington convened by Jake Sullivan about can we blow up the Nord Stream pipeline? Can we get away with blowing up the world's largest pipeline? A very outrageous concept. It has to have deniability, okay? Could US Intel get a scenario for blowing up the pipeline and denying it? Seemingly mad concept, it had Victoria Nuland on January the 7th, saying this, if Russia invades Ukraine one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forwards, okay?
One way or another, yes.
So she's a spokesman of the deep state, right? And then a few days later, 7th of February, the president said exactly the same thing. He said, if Russia invades, there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it. And just for the record, the German Chancellor, Schulz, was standing right next to him and said nothing. So this vast project for European-Russia friendship, the president was saying that it would be terminated if... Okay, now, there was no plan for Russia to invade Ukraine that anyone knew about. So that had to be brought about. It's terribly important to see. This is immediately before, this is the very month in which the invasion is going to be happen. And all through December, January, the media had been telling us that Russia was about to invade Ukraine. Well, how did they know that? Well, what happened, the 17th of February, the war actually began. Massive increase in bombardments of what's called the Donbass. Donbass is a general word for little oblasts in East Ukraine, Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, Zaporizhia. Okay, there's four of them. That's the general word. Okay, they were getting about 1,000 shells a day, suddenly. Now, this is official data by OSCE, the number of shells bombardment. For 8 long years, that East Ukraine had been continually bombarded in a kind of a state-sponsored genocide program. Schools, public buildings been bombarded. The place been littered with landmines. Most of the people who could afford to leave had. Old grandparents were standing around, scared to go out in their own gardens because of the landmines and unexploded shells. And That has increased by two orders of magnitude, for about 10 a day, about 1,000 a day, in around February the 17th. So that was, in effect, the beginning of the war. And also, there was a huge build-up of the Ukraine army on the border. So the officials of those little states then asked Russia for help. Now, hang on, let me get this straight. Then Russia then responded to that. How did it respond? Listen carefully. They responded by recognizing those mini-states, recognizing, which they'd refused to do all that time. The Minsk agreements meant Russia would not recognize them as independent states, right? They were that meant they had the ability to act of their own accord. Immediately they were recognized by Russia. They then requested aid from Russia. They said, help, please rescue us. We're about to be wiped out by the Ukrainian army. And that was then quickly processed by the Russian parliament around about the 22nd. And then on the 24th, they responded to the request for intervention and they came in. Okay? So that was then the intervention. And they had to go into the mainland Ukraine because that is where the shelling was coming from. To stop the shelling of those little Russian mini states, they had to go into the mainland to try and stop the places where the shelling was coming from. My understanding is they haven't been fully successful, but they have in some degree rescued those eastern Russian states from obliteration. Okay? That goes back 1,000 years. The very beginning of Russia, ancient Russia, started in eastern Ukraine and around Kiev. So it's a very, very long history. People have been there for centuries with Russian language, Russian culture, and the Kiev government was trying to wipe that out. So Russia stepped in to protect them on the 24th. Okay, that now meant that America had got what it wanted. It had got a rationale for stopping the Nord Stream pipeline. And apparently, because the president had stated that officially, therefore, the CIA were allowed to, I don't know if you agree with this, Jim, the CIA were allowed to go through it without getting congressional approval. This is what Seymour Hersh said. The CIA could go ahead with its plan to blow up the pipeline because the president had officially said that was the plan. So that is how the rationale for blowing up the pipeline began. And then it happened, it actually happened months later, didn't it? When was it? It was in... was it in September of 22 that it was blown up? So let's put it this way. It wasn't that the pipeline was blown up because of the war going on. It was more the other way around. The war was precipitated so that America could blow up the pipeline and get rid of this terrible challenge of a prosperous Europe. What America's got now, it's doing very well, thank you. It's getting a lot of business from Europe, selling the liquefied natural gas to Europe, European prosperity is decreasing now as Russia has cut off the pipeline. Russian gas has been cut off, they're having to buy gas from America instead. Yeah.
Nick, I think that's all exactly right, and many believe it was really to circumvent peaceful relations between Russia and the European community. That was the objective of blowing up the pipeline and even provoking the antagonism between Ukraine and Russia, because the military-industrial complex would then be the big loser. It would be obvious NATO is antiquated. It's not necessary to spend those vast sums on expensive equipment because Russia is not a threat. So they had to undertake a whole host of very devious Machiavellian activities in order to make Russia out to be a threat again, doing some outrageous things. I mean, blowing up the pipeline was an act of war. This was a criminal act. It was even a violation of human rights, Nick. There's no way under which that No conceivable scenario under which the blowing up of the pipeline would be a justified act by the U.S.
It's an attack on a NATO nation, because it's Germany was involved in that pipeline, and the pipeline goes to Germany. And so by blowing us up, that was, in a way, you're attacking a NATO nation by doing that. It shows how subservient Europe is. It doesn't. Nobody in Europe dares to have an inquiry about who blew up the pipeline. This is an extraordinary business, showing the disintegration of honest dialogue. As I said, this war can only continue through the breakdown and failure of diplomacy, that honest diplomats are not allowed to do their job anymore. That's why the expulsion of Russian diplomats in the previous decade was so crucial to this world war situation we're now drifting towards. You get calumny, for example, 2014, the MH17 shoot down. A plane is shot down right over eastern Ukraine, okay? And there's a whole lot of question marks about who shot it down and how it was shot down, and did people really die, and was it the plane that was supposed to be flying? Loads of question marks, and there's no honest inquiry at all to how it was shot down. And most important, Russia is excluded from the inquiry. Russia's got a whole lot of data, satellite data from that plane, right? Where it was flying, how it was flying, how it crashed. We don't want your data. No, sorry, you're to blame. We're blaming you, so you just keep out of it and take the blame. So that's an example of the breakdown of honest dialogue, which is necessary for a war to happen. I think it's very important to see this. You've got hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian males going out to fight and die, and what are they fighting for? Well, first of all, they're fighting a pro-genocide war. They're fighting to exterminate the traditional culture of East Ukraine. That is what they're fighting for, okay? They're not fighting to defend their country because no one was threatening it. And secondly, since September of last year, elections were held in those little mini-states, and elections as to whether or not the people wanted to leave Ukraine and join Russia. This is after 8 years of being bombarded and denied normal water, electricity and gas from the central government. Okay, in other words, in every way, these little eastern Ukraine states were being treated as if they were some sort of enemy nation or not part of the nation of Ukraine. So they voted. And a huge majority, between 80 and 90%, turned out and voted to leave Ukraine and join Russia. And it showed incredible courage, because during that election, those elections, the bombardment continued. Any building that was manifestly a election booth where people would come to vote would be bombed. Anyone known to be helping the election would have their life threatened and might be killed. So it had to do an election with a mobile election booth, with driving around in buses, moving around, so that the Kiev government couldn't find out where it was. But despite that, the elections happened, and there was about 50 or 100 independent observers who were checking out that it was done right, because throughout Europe, there was only two words used in the media to describe those elections last September, that they were fraud and invalid, or was it invalid, illegal? I think that those were the terms used. There was no discussion, didn't have any discussion about why those elections were invalid. It was an expression of the will of the people. And the Russian government considered and accepted that request, and they are becoming—they're now part of Russia, Novorus, New Russia, Novorussia. So the will of those people was respected, and that eastern Ukraine part was now joined to Russia. In a way, that's why there isn't much to negotiate about. Russia is not trying to invade or attack Ukraine; it's defending that part which has become Russia in East Ukraine. So what are the Ukrainian, what are all those Ukrainian men, several hundred thousand, why are they dying? What are they fighting for? They're fighting to die because they don't believe in democracy. They don't believe in that, or they don't respect the will of the people of East Ukraine to become part of Russia. No, they don't, despite the way those oblasts have been treated, non-stop bombing and shelling and landmines and cutting up the border. Despite that, they seem to think that they can be persuaded to rejoin the Kiev government and Ukraine can go back to being what it was. Well, that's absolute nonsense. It's totally impossible. Who would ever agree to that? My general point here is that there's an absence of honest dialogue whereby diplomats could resolve the conflict. And the same with Crimea. It's been an independent state for 100 years, long before it became part of Ukraine, and it has a perfect right to decide its own destiny, just as Scotland could decide to separate from the United Kingdom if it wanted to. So Crimea voted by a huge majority to leave Ukraine. Well, once the neo-Nazi policies, totally racist policies in 1921 that Zelensky came out with, of banning the Russian culture and tradition in schools and so forth, okay? You've got that totally racist type of, it's a sort of cultural racism. Technically, both sides of Ukraine are the same race, okay? They're all Slavs. But it was a negation of the culture, and after that, Crimea decided, had a vote, to join Russia. And then, by the way, a few years later, they had another vote to see if the people were happy about that, and they were, but they're glad, a large majority, to belong to Russia, which they always did in the past. So I would say this is democracy in action, and the people fighting, dying in Ukraine, which is happening in huge numbers, it's a meat grinder there. The young men of Ukraine are going into a meat grinder and die basically for nothing. And what they're fighting for? They're fighting because they don't believe in the democratic will of the people of Crimea and East Ukraine wanting to join Russia. That's an incredibly futile war to fight. And it happens that that eastern part of Ukraine is traditionally the wealthy part with the industry and the grain fields. So once that decides to leave Ukraine, there won't be a lot left of it, you know, and much source of wealth. Ukraine could only last only a few days without American money being poured into it right now. Its economy is totally defunct.
Well, Nick, I've got two questions. We're about to hit the break, and then we'll open up to callers, but there are a couple of things I want us to pursue a bit more, too. The role of the Wagner Group. It seems to me this is utterly fascinating. You have a mercenary army that's carrying much of the burden of warfare in the case of Ukraine. I mean, I don't know if this is unprecedented, but to me, it's really remarkable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and you hear stories of a huge Russian army that's hardly been used yet. It's training and waiting on the outskirts. As if it was anticipating some wider conflict. But, yeah, I mean, I can't say anything about it, but I agree that it's very heroic what the Wagner mercenaries seem to have done, yeah. When they were let out of prison or something to come and join it. Anyway, they did a wonderful job, and it's very mysterious how their leader was killed off.
Do you believe... Vladimir Putin was responsible? Who do you think?
No. It would have been much too pointless and silly for him to do that in a kind of obvious manner. But it could be someone trying to make it look as if it was him. He had fingers in various pies, that fellow. Sort of African businesses, quite obscure. So I don't think we'll ever know who wanted him dead.
Well, MI6, I mean, most of NATO, I mean, you know, he's defeating this effort, trash Russia and the Donbass. I mean, he was a major force. I think NATO had a powerful motive. The U.S., the CIA could have been instrumental here. Don't you think those are plausible candidates?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I like your forthright discounting that it would have been Putin, even though He was getting wildly popular in Russia, as I understand it, Nick.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, they were uneasy about his rebellion, but I mean, just we'll never know. He's a colourful character with a lot of different interests. So I think we'll just have to leave that. But yeah, you mentioned Britain. What I find mysterious, obviously living in this country, is the way that the fervour for war in this country is far more than any other country in Europe. And I was listening to the couple on the Duran, a brilliant radio show, discussing the conflict, saying that Britain's involvement and support for the Ukraine war is more even than America's. And they are wondering why Britain wanted to be so fervently supportive of it. I mentioned now that Boris Johnson was sent to turn out the peace offer. And then they were the first country to bring in depleted uranium weapons, which is truly diabolical unfolding. Just in case any listeners aren't aware, depleted uranium shells upon impact.
Hold that thought, Nick. We're hitting a break and we'll continue thereafter. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm certainly opening up the phone lines for anyone who'd like to call. But apologies for the, you know, getting our wires crossed here and not connecting more smoothly today. Nick's fetching a cup of tea and not back here yet. 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. Mitchell, let me invite your comments in general, and then we'll brief Nick when he's back. Give me your thoughts in general, because you've been paying very close attention.
Well, Jim, you know, this, what we are seeing, none of this is an accident. You know, this stretching of the Overton window and literally making, you know, everything normal of what we see and that's going on, that the heavy weapons for Ukraine is normalized. You know, long range missiles for Ukraine are normalized. You know, F-16s and Abrams tanks are normalized now. When before, you know, they were all essentially red lines. And, you know, it's just a question of, you know, when, you know, when there is something that pushes the red line or pushes the red button instead of the red line, I guess. You know, I've make it no secret that, you know, I see this January 2022 color revolution by the veterans of the Maidan Revolution in Ukraine when they attempted to overthrow Kazakhstan. That was the last straw. And remember, that was in the middle of these alleged negotiations. And the rejection, really, not only of NATO, but by the U.S., of any agreement about Ukraine.
Nick, yeah, this is Mitchell, my producer, who himself has had a radio show, extensive knowledge of political developments, raising several questions. Nick is here now. Mitchell, if you would like to specifically phrase your question to Nick, he'll be pleased to respond.
Yeah, hello, Mitchell. Nick. I'm glad you're back.
Fine.
Yeah, just the other day, you know, India and Canada, this is kind of a tangent off of the Ukraine topic, but India and Canada are now having this this riff about this alleged murder of a ski in Vancouver. And I think Canada or India has suspended visa applications right now because of alleged threats to their embassies in Canada. And they're calling Canada a terrorist nation. India is. Do you think that's more an attack on the BRICS than on India?
It's getting a great new sense of self-importance, isn't it? It's a BRICS nation, At the same time, it's staying friendly, having military alliances with America, which is quite a sort of difficult position. So it's balancing both sides. Both sides are really hoping to get the friendship of India as it's a rising economic power. And, yeah, it certainly did show what's what by this episode with Canada. I think there was also a question of drugs on Trudeau's plane, wasn't there? They were checking his plane for drugs and making out that he was trying to smuggle some drugs when he came to visit India. Also, I think the British Prime Minister got a bit of a snub from the Indian, from Modi in India when he went to visit. He didn't visit the Prime Minister as such. He was shown somebody else to meet. This does show that India, new sense of self-importance in India, which I greatly welcome, you know. As you mentioned Canada, let me just point out that it's recently revealed they started training Ukrainian troops back in 2015. What were they training them for? Obviously for the coming war. The whole of NATO was preparing, NATO was preparing Ukraine troops for a coming conflict. While Russia thought that, or hoped that the Minsk agreement was going to be signed, while Putin was still making speeches about our common home in Europe and European friendship and hoping to complete the pipeline, NATO elements were actually preparing for the coming war. And Canada had this extraordinary role of training Ukrainian troops, which shows the, I don't know what it shows, that the general absence of ethics, I suppose. Yeah.
Mitchell, more?
Well, Nick, it is, you know, it is war to these guys. It is war to these people. And they will do anything they can to hold on to their power. And they don't mind, you know, genocide. Yep. They've done it before.
But
it's such a shame. I mean, in a sense, you say hold on to their power. I mean, they could have done that, hold on to whatever they got without this conflict. The point of this conflict derives from the US neocons, their philosophy, whereby America, at the end of the last century, looked like America was going to be the master of the universe and the undisputed, you know, hegemonic power of planet Earth. And the Brzezinski Doctrine, you know, no rival power blocks must be allowed to exist. They're going to be broken up. And that, in a way, is the source of this, that Ukraine is explicitly being used to prod the Russian bear under the belief that Russia could somehow be broken up and beaten. That is, I think we have to recognise, that is the source of it. And it's also the, how come NATO is, as it were, speaking with a forked tongue? The duplicity of the NATO spokespeople. The people in Europe will say, oh, NATO is a defensive alliance. NATO is a defensive alliance, you know. Well, ever since the bombing to bits of Yugoslavia at the end of the last century, round-the-clock bombing by NATO, it's clear that it isn't a defensive alliance. And now, in this war, it's precipitated the war by moving eastwards, remorselessly moving eastwards towards Russia. And if it hadn't done that, we wouldn't have the conflict. If we could just have kept the various neutral nations that used to be the Warsaw Pact, you know, like Poland, Czechoslovakia, and so forth, Armenia, a whole lot of neutral nations down the middle of Europe, if they could just have stayed neutral and independent and not have American weapons put on their doorstep, then this would not have happened. And it's obviously it's unbearable for Russia to have American nuclear missiles within 5 or 6 minutes reach of Moscow and St. Petersburg. But what the neocons want is the idea of, the philosophy, Jim, isn't necessarily that they as such want war, but they want the ability to have escalation dominance, which means that they can threaten Russia, and Russia has to say yes, or else, you know. And so you get this duplicity with NATO of, you ask a NATO spokesperson what are these missiles doing in Poland, Romania, and Germany, American missiles pointed at Russia, NATO spokesman will say, oh, these are anti-ballistic missiles. That means that they're protective, supposed to be protecting Europe, okay?
Nick, I have many times observed that our Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. You know, Cynthia McKinney revealed the pledge that every new member of Congress is asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of that of even the United States, and virtually all do sign. And, of course, our media is dominated by Israel as well. The Rothschilds even own the AP and Reuters, so virtually all foreign news has an Israeli or Jewish or Zionist filter. I've been contending, which I believe to be the case, namely Israel wants to reclaim Ukraine as the new Israel, because most of the modern-day occupants of Israel are, in fact, Khazarians or descendants. They're not from the tribe of Judah. They are Khazarians, and they'd like to return to their ancestral homeland, and they will brook no opposition. So we have a conflict between an irresistible force, the Zionists, and an immovable object, Russia. Russia is not going to surrender Crimea, Donbass, or access to the Black Sea. Do you largely agree, or would you make some fine-tuning?
Let me just add, I mentioned this was initially ancient Russia, R-U-S, 1,000 years ago. Roughly, we're talking about somewhere around about 1,000 AD, they moved in, displacing the old Khazarian Empire. What used to be Khazaria was, as it were, this is my understanding, was pushed out as Rus started to develop. So you've got the dawn of Russia by pushing out the Khazarians, so the story goes way, way back in time. Yeah, I think it's very important. If anybody wanted to develop peace in that part of the world, peace, you'd need to go back over the traumas of past history. I think it's totally important to be able to do that. Where do these terrible fears come from? And why do we hate? Why does one side hate the other when they're the same blood and bone and race? And until recently, nearly everyone spoke Russia in Ukraine. How do these ancient enmities begin? So, yeah, as you say, Jim, ancient Khazaria was there a long time ago. If indeed the Jews want to come back there, in a way, that's good news. It means there won't be a nuclear war in Ukraine. I don't know.
Zelensky has been, attacking the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, the largest in Europe. The Russians have been seeking to shut it down. Zelensky talked about Russia planning a nuclear event in Ukraine, which is, of course, completely absurd. It would be Zelensky would be planting a false flag to blame on Russia. But it seemed to be their tremendous hazard with nuclear anything, in particular contamination of large regions that become uninhabitable for hundreds of years. I mean, this is so colossally stupid, Nick, that I can hardly believe, but it looks like it's one of the options with which the West is playing.
It's the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. Let's hope Russia manages to close it down to an extent that if it is hit, that it won't blow up. But we have got both America and Britain are now supplying depleted uranium weapons, and you get official sources saying, oh, it's not radioactive, don't worry, they're okay. Well, we'll say the point is uranium burns upon impact at quite a low temperature, will ignite, and that means you get the fine dust of uranium blowing in the wind. And if you get a speck of that in your lungs, it's bad news. It is still slightly radioactive. It's a toxin that people just won't want. I mean, people aren't going to want to buy wheat if it's contaminated with that depleted uranium, this could be ruining Ukraine, having that, bringing this dreadful new stuff into the into the battleground, these shells.
Mitchell, I know you have more questions and thoughts and comments, please.
Oh, yes. Well, it's really going to have hard to have peace when there is no off-ramp and the neocons, you know, are running a nuclear bluff. And I think that's the reason, the base reason why Russia invaded, Russia annexed, and the story should be over. I guess, you know, the Ukrainians and the West are just in denial.
As you say, hard to say that there's no off-ramp, but that's generally the case with American wars, isn't it? You don't never quite know what the point is except to crush some other little nation. And how does America back out of it? How can it declare? It has to declare victory. Usually it somehow declares victory and then falls out. But it can't really do that this time. As you say, it's not clear how this can end. I think that Europe will get more and more fed up, and Congress will get more and more fed up with paying out tens of billions of dollars when no progress is being made. The danger is people like Mike Pence will just demand escalation. But will that happen in America? Will they want to escalate? I mean, America always exports its wars, doesn't it? It has wars far away, so American mainland is always safe, and so nobody in America really suffers from the wars. It's just some far flung country, and that's partly why it keeps doing it. Yeah.
Further thoughts, Mitchell?
Yes. You know, Nick, I've been thinking, can we slow down and stop this, the World Economic Forum? You know, you were talking about think tanks and earlier. One of the biggest and the most dangerous ones in America right now are you may even mentioned it, the Center for a New American Security, CNAS. And they really evolved out of the destruction of the PNAC, the Project for a New American Century. And their leader or former leader was Victoria Nuland. So John Brennan and all the gang is over there trying to bring about their the military arm of the New World Order here in the United States is just continuing its attack and its advance on countries that have not succumbed to their plans. That's how I see a lot of this. Does that make any sense?
A level event, wasn't it? It's to project American power on those four levels, land, sea, air, and space. And this seems so exciting to have the world's largest ever empire is bigger than that of ancient Rome, and bigger than the British Empire, and it's a sort of intoxicating prospect. And let's hope it all falls to bits.
Nick, would you agree with me that Vladimir Putin is a true Russian nationalist? I have a colleague who's skeptical and thinks that Putin is only half-hearted about Ukraine and that he's too much under the influence of the Lubavitchers. What would you make of that claim?
He's restoring Russia. That's why he's so popular. Huge majority of the people support him because they remember back in the 90s, after the Soviet Union collapsed and various powers moved in to loot Russia and the old Soviet Union and the terrible poverty and destitution, and Russia has risen and it's stayed intact. And there's a true spirit of Russia, cultural spirit, which means that it just can't be destroyed. This is the awesome fact, not just the world's largest country, but it cannot be broken up. And in a way, the conflict will continue as long as America believes that it can break up Russia. This is there was a Rand Corporation report just a few years ago planning how to break up Russia and how to loot, steal its oil fields and so on. And that's what they'd love to do. And only when they've given up that hope can peace develop. Once they've realised that Russia doesn't want to occupy other countries, it doesn't have military bases outside itself, and it sticks to its agreements, it wants friendship with other nations. And it's now given up wanting friendship with Europe because Europe is so treacherous.
Yeah.
And it's turned to the East.
In terms of American foreign policy, we're just a bunch of bandits and thugs, Nick. It's just a disgrace.
Pirates. Don't leave out. We're pirates too, Jim.
I like that. That's perfect.
Well, you didn't used to be. Back in the day, for example, Nixon, he had, negotiated with China, and he struck deals, and America respected its conventions. And I think Kennedy tried to. So I think... that's about 50 years ago, I admit. But there was a time when America and Kissinger, whatever you think about him, he was a diplomat and he would be concerned to stick to treaties. And now, nobody gives a toss about him. It's as if a new president can just ignore the binding agreements of previous presidents and make up their own, look at the way the nuclear security architecture of Europe has been disintegrated. For 30 years, the fear of nuclear war is gone, right? There's no fear of nuclear war in Europe for 30 years, which is an amazing achievement of diplomats, right? They've got rid of all those intermediate nuclear weapons. And now what happens? The INF Treaty was left to lapse in 2019. That means America can start putting back intermediate nuclear weapons in Europe targeted on Russia, and that means you've got a so-called theater nuclear war in Europe. That is the nightmare now coming back to Europe. And before that, the ABM treaty was allowed to elapse. America pulled out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty, and that, slightly complicated, but that does give you security of a nuclear deterrence. Nuclear deterrence will work as long as you don't build anti-ballistic missiles, and that is what has now started. The treacherous position we're in Europe now is that ballistic missiles are put on Russia's border, and NATO, with its duplicitous tongue, will say, oh, this is just defensive, they're anti-ballistic missiles. But the point is that within an American base, the American base has got nuclear warheads, and it can swap over put nuclear bombs in those weapons without Russia knowing. So Russia's got no way of knowing that those anti-ballistic missiles haven't got nuclear warheads in them, okay? How is Russia supposed to endure this? If it's just 6 minutes away from their major capital cities, that means you don't have nuclear security. The theory of nuclear deterrence is that you've got, preferably about half an hour between two sides. So one side launches, the other side can get a bit of time to check if it wants to respond or not. So this practically guarantees a war in Europe. By destabilising the nuclear deterrence. And politicians don't seem bothered by this in Europe. I guess the fear of nuclear weapons has faded away now, hasn't it? It seems people aren't frightened of them anymore in the same way. It's hard to tell, but certainly that is one of the causes of the Ukraine conflict, that Ukraine says they want to join NATO, And that will involve having American nuclear weapons on Russia's doorstep, and Russia absolutely cannot endure that, quite rightly.
Nick, final thoughts? Tell us about your book, where they can find your book about the just war. I think you're doing something very important here.
All right, thanks. Can I plead, any listeners, if you could put a review, Amazon review, on my book here. I'm selling Amazon, but Amazon tend not to promote my books too much. But if it's got a few decent reviews, that really makes a huge difference to the visibility. So if anyone's proves this book and feels like putting an Amazon review, that'll be a great help to me, yeah. Right. I mean, I'm pleased with it. For me, the best bit in this book is the speeches of Vladimir Putin that I quote at the end. I love rereading those. And there's a...
Have you had reviews, Nick? Are you getting a response to it?
Well, not, but it's got about half a dozen reviews on Amazon.
I was thinking in Times of London or something like that, you know.
Oh, no one. I don't get anything whatsoever in printed media, no. I mean, I could tell you a story if you like. I spent a day going to Britain's anti-war movement. It's called Stop the War. Me and a friend were at a Stop the War Day conference about Ukraine, right? And my friend took this book up to one of the organisers, said, any chance you can allow this to be sold at your meeting, or promote it anyway? And he just said one word. Anti-Semite.
Oh, God. Nick, it's a joy having you on. We'll do a better job at connecting and get a better audio and the whole bit. But I can't thank you enough for coming on today, my friend.
Well, I don't have a wrap for this, Jim. Yeah, I've been for many, many years. And,
yeah. Paul Feiglin Conspiracy Conference in 16th and 17th December. Thank you, Nick Kohlerstrom. Everyone, have a great weekend.
Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their